This is Hope, and I'm your host of Hope Solo Speaks. FIFA Pro is the only worldwide organization that represents professional footballers. FIFA Pro, not to be confused with FIFA, unites the voice of professional footballers and their national unions to ensure they are internationally represented in the decisions affecting their work environment. FIFA Pro's work is driven by the priorities of players, and they work endlessly to improve a player's work environment and their overall well-being, covering all aspects of a player's career from beginning to end, from pay, contracts, and personal development to health and safety to justice and arbitration. By advancing fundamental rights of players within the football industry, FIFA Pro naturally works in the broader human rights framework. The history of the football industry demonstrates that when the fundamental human and labor rights of players have been protected, respected, and guaranteed, our sport has grown as a social institution as well as economically. Doing good work often breeds good results. And that is why today I am proud to bring on Alexander Gomez Brunavoid, senior legal counsel at FIFA Pro for close to a decade, and also a FIFA DRC judge. She was an integral force in defining what is now known as the FIFA maternity regulations, which aim to stop women from having to choose between being a player or a mother, creating an environment where they can do both without having to sacrifice aspects of the other. And what she has done for the women's game is singular. Thank you, FIFA Pro and Alexandra, for the work you do. Alexandra, thank you for joining us today. You're the senior legal counsel for FIFA Pro, so it's an honor to have you on Hope Solo Speaks.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
There are many of us who are unaware that FIFA Pro even exists. And to be honest with you, I didn't even know about FIFA Pro until pretty late in my career. I was hoping that you can explain to the listeners what FIFA Pro does.
Yeah, exactly. It stands for the International Federation of Professional Football Players. It's an organization that was created back in 1965, actually. So it has some years, but the truth is that probably in the last two decades, it really gained more power. And the reason why it was created was to give a voice to players. To professional players. So the idea was that historically, football was ruled, let's say, by the employers. So by the clubs, by the federations, by FIFA, and the players that are actually the ones disputing the games and providing the show and the game, they were not really, at least not structurally, listened to. So FIFA was created to give an international collective voice to all professional football players around the world. And the way we did it was to unite the different associations, player associations or unions that there were in the different countries. So the members of FIFA nowadays are actually those player associations or player unions in the different countries, and the players are members of those unions. So the players are not directly members of FIFA, but it's like an indirect membership, a little bit similar to what happens, in FIFA. The members are the federations, and then clubs are members of those federations. So there's not a direct link between the club and FIFA. Well, the same a little bit with FIFA. And as I was saying, it was created in 1965, but then, of course, it was quite small. It was the bigger countries that could also afford getting together, traveling and chatting with other colleagues from different countries, sharing experiences, explaining what they were doing in their countries, what worked, what didn't work. I don't know if they had to go on a strike, how was it like, and what they achieved, what could be done, what couldn't be done. So it was a little bit of sharing experiences, but quite soft, if you want. Because there was no like headquarters or something strong. There was not an office that could work on it. And it was actually only in 1995 with the Bosman ruling that we really gained more power. FIFPro was there supporting Jean-Marc Bosman in that very important ruling that that determined that after that moment, the whole transfer system had to change because the players were free after their contract had come to an end. So this led to a reform that anyway took some time. So everything was slower, right? Like we're now living in a world where everything is now. And when we think back on how things went, I told you 1965, FIFA was created, 1995 is the Bosman ruling. And only in 2001 was the real reform in the transfer system. So it still took some years. We signed our first MOU with FIFA in 2006. And it was then when, for the first time, FIFA officially recognized FIFPro and FIFPro as being the collective international voice of professional football players. And from then on, everything started to build up. But everything was always a little bit like with the push. So we needed Bosman afterwards. If you look at the transfer reform that we're having now for some years, the reason why we are in the position we are now was that in 2015, we launched a complaint in the European Commission because we said it's not really justified to have a transfer system as we do have now, because the objectives that were looked for by allowing this transfer system that is quite restrictive by its nature are not being complied with. So after we launched that complaint was when FIFA said like, okay, wait, let's sit together and let's try to reform transfer system. And that's what we have been doing for the last years. And again, we're not happy with the speed. We think that, you know, things need to go faster. But there have been massive improvements, to be honest. If you look at the history of football regulations, the last years have been phenomenal.
Well, so the inception was back in 1965, but who actually started FIFPro? Was it started by players or by executives, by attorneys?
It was started actually by player unions. So we have our initial five. So it was player unions from England, from France, from Italy, from the Netherlands, and from Scotland that got together and said, okay, let's get our brains together and try to exchange experiences and become something bigger. And then little by little, we started growing. We now have members in 67 countries all around the world. But considering that FIFA has 211 members, of course, there are many countries that do not have a FIFA representation. For those countries and for the players that are playing in those countries, we always offer our services anyway. So, of course, we cannot ask them to be a member if they can't be a member. So that's why we also help a lot of players that from other countries, let's say.
Okay, so FIFPro ensures players have basic protections. Players are entitled to the same human rights and good governance practices as any other member of society and the same legal protections as any other employee. Can you tell us about some of the challenges that you've had to face in terms of protecting players' rights?
I think that the way that the transfer system was created was not focused on the players and the human rights and the labor rights, but focusing on what was functional to provide a game that could be sold. So we still have nowadays many times this discussion. For example, when we talk about a dispute between a player and a club, which principles, which general principles of law apply? Because we have an RSTP, that is the regulations on the status and transfer of players, that is kind of the Bible, let's say, to rule what happens in these relationships. But it's a small document. It doesn't cater for all the scenarios. And when you interpret a regulation, you need to have it as a background some principles of law. So which principles of law would apply here. So for us, it's so clear that the principles of law that apply are the labor principles. However, there are still people that say, no, it's more civil because it's, like a civil relationship, commercial relationship. And we say, well, it's very clear that there is an employment relationship because there is subordination and, all the elements that need to count when you have an employment relationship. So clearly the labor principles apply. So to start with, that discussion that is like very basic touches, every argument. So it is very tricky. That is one of the things. Then in some regions of the world, the players are still not recognized as workers. So they're recognized as service providers. So they do not have all those protections that labor law provide, like social security, et cetera. And this is actually one of the problems in women's football as well, that many of the women's football players are not understood to be professional players, right? What is a professional player according to the FIFA RCP? It is a player that has a written contract and that earns more money than the expenses to go to train. So actually the standard of the bar is not that high. Mm-mm. If we consider that, there are a lot of women professionals. Yeah. There are a lot. But the thing is that when we talk about male football, then it's like, oh, it's fine if they're considered professional. But with women's football, it's always a little bit more complicated to arrive to the same conclusion. So that is tricky. And I mean, honestly, even in FIFPro, we also had to go through an evolution because when FIFPro was created, and these unions got together, these unions were only representing male players, right, at that time. So, of course, as the game evolved, we said, obviously, we need to also include women players. As long as they are professional players, they should be also protected by FIFPro. And so our union started also gathering the membership of the women's football players. And nowadays, we have, I think it's around 85% of our members that also represent women players. In some cases, it is a bit difficult for them because if they are really a union and the women players are not considered to be workers in their country, they cannot legally protect these players because they would not fit into this definition. But fortunately, nowadays, it's the minority, so it's pretty broad.
So what year did FIFPro begin to gather women footballers?
I think it was, I'm thinking now, around 2013, more okay. or less, that we started working on that. We have a great board member, Caroline Johnson.
Of course. She's the goalkeeper of my Sweden. Fellow goalkeeper union friend. Yes. Yes, please tell her hello.
And she started, of course, she was a part of the union in Sweden, and she started, bringing this like, hey, we also need to represent women players, and so it started, and
around
unfortunately, we've come a long way.
Well, thank goodness. Maybe I should still be playing and I'd be covered a lot more than I really was. But are the men and women players, are they represented by the same FIFPro employees, whether it's the council and the attorneys? Is it the same representatives for both the men and the women?
Yeah. For example, in the legal department, we don't have like
a separate
legal counsel for female players or male players. In terms of policy, it's one department, it's FIFPro policy, but we have a director on women's football and a director on men's football. But that's a little bit also to cater more in depth on the specific problematics or issues or things to improve in one or the other. But as an office, we all do everything, let's say.
So, what would you say are the most important issues to... I guess let's separate this by gender here. So some of the most important issues to the male players and then, of course, for the female players.
Well, for the male players, It is still, and it has been for very long, the non-payment.
Really?
So it's really crazy, the percentage of players that do not receive their salaries on time. And this also happens in women's football. It is a little bit lower, at least in the last research that we made. But I could guess that if we had like a new research this year, maybe the percentages are anyway similar. But we're talking about almost half of the professional players around the world that do not receive their salaries on time. It is crazy. Like, it is so difficult to think of any other industry in the world where workers just do not get paid. And we're not talking about late payments, like getting paid, you know, 1-2 days or 1 week late. We're talking about months, right? 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. So it is very extreme. I would say that is the biggest issue because of the amounts. Like, it is crazy, the amount of players that do not receive their salary.
That is astonishing to me. I would have thought that more female players weren't getting paid in comparison to male players. So that's absolutely astonishing to me. You're saying 50% of the male professional footballers around the world are not getting paid.
It's almost 50, it's 45, something like that.
Wow.
And with female players in our last research, but this was from 2017. So as I say, because women's football grew, I also think that unfortunately this also grew, but I don't know, hopefully not, but well. Then in women's football, it was 37%, but it's like, it's huge. It's huge. And also it is sometimes more impactful for women's football because their salaries are lower. So if you're not paid 1 month and your salary is $500 per month, you really struggle, right? This happens as well in men's football anyway, yeah? Because we tend to think like, well, you know, in men's football, they are well off in terms of salary. And the truth is that, you know, the 43% of male players, professional male players around the world earn an average of $1,000 per month. So it's really not that much.
Wow.
It's really lower than you know.
That is shocking.
Yeah.
So that's the number one complaint and number one issue that matters most to the male players. So if it's not the same for the female footballers, because they on average get paid more timely, what is the number one issue for female footballers?
Yeah, well, I would say that it's still an issue for women players because 37% is really high. But maybe it's still for women players to the recognition of professionalism, you know, and the standards. Women players are not getting the correct standards. They're still not getting to play in the proper pitches with proper coaches, with, you know, proper facilities. So that is something that is really restraining the growth, and it's still growing because it's going and it will not stop, but this affects a lot.
But it needs to grow around the world, you know, grassroots and up and different developing nations. So yes, the sport has skyrocketed. Obviously the culmination will be the World Cup this summer. Each World Cup breaks new records, new viewership, new sponsorship dollars, new television ratings. You know, even more bonus money for some of these top nations and from FIFA themselves. But at the end of the day, there are so many countries that still are fighting for, like you said, professional standards of playing, you know, exactly. playing on practice fields in the park. You know, women exactly. athletes should not be having to deal with it this day and age, but we're talking about countries all over the world.
Yeah.
So how do you promote the growth?
Because it's so difficult to, you know, tackle the world. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do in FIFPro is start bottom up, right? So say like, okay, World Cup, that is the biggest tournament. It's organized by an organization, FIFA, that has the experience, that has been doing this for really long, that has the means, that has a lot of money that they can use. So let's use it and let's do it. And then we start bottom up and we start making those countries that are able to get to the World Cup stronger to provide a better spectacle, etc. Then that brings also more money. So it starts to trickle. And then start to trickle down. So of course we want to get to every country. It's not that we are focusing on the top just per se. We're focusing on the top because otherwise you really don't know where to start. So what we're working on is on the conditions of the World Cup. So the FIFA statutes state very clearly that they will not allow any type of discrimination, and specifically they talk about gender discrimination, right? So there is no justification to have different standards, different conditions, and different prize money for the men's World Cup and the women's World Cup. And why am I saying this? Because the first argument people go like, yeah, but men's football make more money than women's football. Well, let me tell you that the prize money of the World Cup is not connected to revenue, right? The statutes of FIFA do not say the amount of the prizes will be, you know, related to the amount of money made in the World Cup. It does not come from that. FIFA makes money in lots of different ways, but the prize money of the World Cup is not determined by the revenue of that World Cup. So if as FIFA, I want to give a very clear message, and this message will trickle down to the federations, right? I have to say, I give them exactly the same, right? And I would even say, I give more to the one that needs more. But okay, let's stop it in the very minimum of saying, let's give them the same.
Equal prize money.
Not doing this, right? But it's not only the equal prize money, it's the equal conditions.
Well, of course. I mean, I was there in the 2015 World Cup when we played on turf in Canada with a lack of security, a lack of venues, a lack of everything. And I cannot believe FIFA allowed it. And I can't believe the Canadian Soccer Association hosted it in that manner as well. And you'll never see it again. I would place a bet on it that you will never see those conditions again.
Exactly. I mean, the good part is that you see that in every World Cup, conditions get better, prize money gets better. There is more investment from FIFA because, I mean, of course, I don't mean to be, you know, cruel and say like they're not doing anything. They are, and they have done a lot, and you see a huge increase.
Of course.
What I'm saying is that enough? Are they not able to do more? Because the normal justification we get from clubs, and there sometimes it is more understandable, is we don't have the money. But FIFA has the money. Mm-hmm. It is clear that FIFA has the money. So it's a matter of saying like priorities.
Well, and they state that they stand for gender equality. So
exactly.
You would put your money where your mouth is, right? And they're not doing that entirely.
Exactly.
They are making gains in the game, of course, and you have to respect those gains that are being made. But when you stand for something and you speak it clearly to the world, but then you don't practice that, there's hypocrisy involved. And FIFA
exactly.
has been known to be hypocritical for some time.
And something else that really matters and that sometimes people are not that much aware of is all the condition, the way the teams travel to a World Cup, with the amount of people that they travel, the amount of physios and, you know, all the people that help you during the World Cup, the conditions in which you travel, like if you go business class, if you go with a private plane, if you go with economy class, it is not the same. The amount of days that you can stay, right? If you look at the last two regulations, there is differences in many things, including that the women had to leave the tournament the day after that they were eliminated, mm-hmm. right? While the men can stay some more days. So these kind of things need to be eradicated like yesterday, you know?
And I assume you guys are working to do that.
Exactly, exactly. We are, as I was saying, we have like one of our directors of policy, with Sarah Gregorius. She's really working on these conditions, speaking a lot with the women's football department in FIFA. She is very experienced also as a player. She played in the national team of New Zealand for many years, and she also played in different clubs in different continents. So she also has this, yeah, very good perspective, also because she has not retired that long ago, so everything is quite fresh. And this also helps, right? to have the more direct perspective. That is also the reason why some years ago we launched in FIFPRO the Global Players Council, as we call it. So this is a body, it's an informal body, but it's composed of current players. And the idea is to consult them on different topics, to both ways, right? So to consult them and also for them to tell us like, hey, look at this, like, what are we going to do about this? So it goes both ways. So it's not a body that that is formal, that needs to vote or things like that, but it's more consultation. And it has proven to be really, really good, really positive, because also as it is like, it is a quite large group, but considering the whole amount of professional players around the world, of course, it's not that big. And it's really good because when we have an idea, we say like, oh my God, like let's launch this. Sometimes we, you know, first check with them just to see like their initial reaction. Although of course we have already checked with our members, and our members are in contact with the players. Sometimes it's good to have this one-to-one interaction. Also because the Global Players Council is composed of very elite football players. And it sometimes happens, it's not in every case, but in some unions, the vast majority of players are really like from the lower divisions or, you know, not that famous. And sometimes when the players really get to hit the fame and be national team players and whatever, they're sometimes not that much connected to the unions. So we also thought, okay, we also need the perspective because there are some decisions that really affect the top. When we're talking about the match calendar, this usually affects much more those national team players because those are the ones that are running around from one place to the other. So we really need to get like their perspective. And this is what we did with the maternity regulations. So we looked at different sports to get ideas. We looked at the ILO, the International Labour Organization standards. We looked at experience as mothers. I'm a mother myself, you know, but we needed to see what would be the reaction, you know, of players. So we also consulted with them immediately when we drafted our proposal for FIFA. And as I say, I find it really, really interesting. And they are so, you know, that prejudice that people would go like, you know, if they are famous, they will not care that much. Like, it's absolutely the contrary. They are willing, they want to help. They, you know, sometimes, of course, they don't have a lot of time, but when they find a moment, they immediately try to help us. So that's really nice.
I was reading about the FIFA Fund for football players, which is something you guys have taken part in and really took initiative to help players out. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, well, what we had been facing for many years is that sometimes, due to mismanagement, mainly some clubs just went bust. They disappeared, they disaffiliated from their federation. And the clubs were there just, you know, still with a contract in paper, sometimes for 3, 4, 5 more years. But, you know, there was nothing they could do. Why? Because there are some structures within football where you can claim the due amounts, sometimes at federation level. And if you're an international player, you can also do it in FIFA, in what is called the Dispute Resolution Chamber of FIFA. But this can only count if we're talking about members. And the moment the club goes bust and disaffiliates from the federation, they're not a member anymore. So, you know, players, normally when the clubs go bust, it's not that it comes like from day to night. So they already owed 6 months' salaries maybe, you know, to the players. And then they go bust, and then the players could not go anywhere. So we had been talking about this a lot with FIFA. And thankfully, 4 years ago, we agreed, or 3 years ago, we agreed to start with this fund for players. So this is financed fully by FIFA. And actually, it just came to an end in December 2022. We are in negotiations to prolong it. It is very necessary. We hope and wish that, and we're pretty sure that, of course, it will be extended. FIFA understands the need, and they have also promised it many times. So I'm sure we will have it renewed. But yeah, this has helped a lot of players. And you see the need that it has. Imagine that for the first period, we had 5 million to allocate. And the first period, we made it longer because, of course, it was a little bit unfair to say like, oh, yeah, it's from this year and for the rest, like, good luck. So we did it as from 2015. Still a little bit strict, I know, but at least we gave the opportunity to a bit more players to present their debts and explain their cases. We had 5 million. Do you know how much was requested for that, for only for that first period? No, 60 million. 60, wow. 60 million. So obviously we could pay them a little portion of what we should have paid.
Yeah.
And we're only talking, when we talk about the FIFA fund for players, we're only talking about overdue payables. So salaries that were not paid. If the player as well has a decision that says on top of the overdue payables, the club should pay a compensation to you, that part we didn't even consider. So 60 million on overdue payables.
Oh my goodness. Ooh, so, well, that fund is very important. And I hope you guys can renegotiate that with FIFA, because obviously you are taking care of the players when it's absolutely necessary. You know, most employees don't just get their salary stripped away, you know, without notice, with 6 months of back pay that is owed to them. It's a very tough lifestyle for many professional footballers that I think oftentimes gets glorified because we see the top of the game on television. We see the EPL, we see World Cups, but we don't really understand the lifestyle of a footballer, the ins and the outs and the nuances and the struggles and tribulations. So thank you for being there for all football players. Wanted to ask you just a couple more questions. Thank you for your time. Yeah, this is enlightening and really, yeah, it's powerful, but it's also positive to bring to the sport. So it's nice to have you on to bring this positivity to the podcast today. So the football industry has gone through profound changes over the last probably couple of years. You referred to the last couple of decades, but really over the last couple of years, especially on the women's side, how does this acceleration of change impact the game?
Well, I think it impacts it massively. If you look at specifically at women's football, you see the speed of development of conditions of how the fans are engaging more and more. And this is no coincidence. It's like everything goes hand in hand. I think that we're finally starting to understand that it's all a circle, right? And when you feed in one part, it all trickles down. So in that sense, I think it's really positive. On the other hand, sometimes we feel that decisions are only taken looking at what brings a lot of profit or more show or whatever. And here I'm talking about the match calendar. So we add competitions here and there, and we fill everything with competitions where, you know, players are up to here with playing. And this is not even the same in men's football and women's football. So we need to sit for a moment, look at the calendar, look how it's filled in, and say, is this even possible to keep on adding competitions? What we see in men's football is that in general terms, it is completely too much, right? So they're not having enough rest. And in women's football, we have two opposite. We have those players that are playing like crazy, you know, and this leads to injuries and it leads to a lot of problems. I would dare to say it even leads to a worse show, because if you cannot play at your best because you're like completely exhausted, you know, you're not going to provide the same show. But so we have that, but that's maybe a smaller part in women's football. And you have a sector that do not play enough. They do not have enough competitions. So we need to, you know, sit together and talk about this. But what happens in practice? In practice, it happens that we sit with FIFA, we say, let's sit together and let's discuss match calendar together. We sign an agreement saying that we will do so. And 3 days after, FIFA approves a match calendar on their own. 3 days. So I really think, I don't know how these things happen. You know, I'm not a political animal, but I just feel that sometimes it's not bad faith, but it's like people do not understand how the world works. as FIFPro, we would love players to play a lot and players love playing, but we need to look at health and we need to look at what is possible and what is not possible. So at FIFPro, we're not trying to just like stop all tournaments and stop, you know, money being made, because the money in the end trickles down to players and that is amazing. But everything needs a little bit of, you know, proportion. And yeah, it strikes me that this is not seen. We have in our website a platform that we developed that you can enter the name of, I don't remember now exactly how many players we have, but we have like a quite long list of players. So you can type that name of the player. We have it for both male and female. And then you can see the amount of games they have played, the amount of rest days that they have had, the time zones that they have crossed, like how many times, the injuries we didn't add it because of personal data, but we were thinking of even adding that. But then you see the extreme conditions, you know, and these players are experienced. And then sometimes, you know, they go to the World Cup and people go like, oh, did you see this player? We expected more. Yeah, he's not a machine or she is not a machine, you know.
Do you think we'll ever see a World Cup every 2 years?
Well, that's also something that really, it is crazy. It is crazy.
Crazy to think about, but it's been discussed.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, how do you help with transitioning into life after football?
Well, we have a different tool. So we have it depends on how you see it. There's one part that is all on mental health. So because that is one of the things that is affected a lot, of course, during the career as well, but, you know, in the transition and after very much. So we have developed a tool, it's called the mental health tool, and it has different sort of products to offer to our unions to use in the dressing rooms, you know, to show to the players. And at the same time, we developed a network of professionals in all the countries. So that the moment there is something difficult or doubtful going on, that because of course not all the unions are prepared to have like a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and, you know, all the personnel in the union. Some do, but it's obviously the minority. But when they don't, that at least they have a network, that at least they can refer players to others. And what we did as well, like one of the pieces that we prepared that I really liked was one that we created to address players, not to look at themselves, but to look at their teammates. Because it's very difficult sometimes to identify yourself that you are going through mental health issues. So it is more addressed to the teammates when you see, you know, a teammate that is a little bit, you know, less talkative than normal, that, you know, goes away earlier, or she or he never stays for, I know, after hour, or yeah, there are many, many things that you can just check, and then to go and ask them like, hey, how are you, you know, and let's talk and incentivize talking. So that's also one of the key elements of this campaign. It's called Are You Ready to Talk? Because all, you know, specialists have told us that the first step, and it's the most difficult, is to first go to someone. It doesn't even need to be a professional the first time, to go to someone and say like, hey, you know, I think I have a problem or something is going on. And just even, you don't need to say it's a problem. You just say like, I'm sleeping well.
Struggling or something.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really interesting. And what we did was we also gathered the testimonies of three different players from different parts of the world, talking about how they dealt with, you know, mental health problems and how they got better and how it's normal. And to identify, I remember when I was talking about this in a conference and I was with a national team player, male national team player from my country, like really well known, and we were talking about this and he said like, you know what, I never thought of it, but there was a stage in my career where I had to take sleeping pills like every night, and now I think of it and I was like, I think it was actually, you know, going through something. So it's good to talk about this, because the more we talk about this, like, the more we know.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. And then on education, that's also really important for transition, So we have different agreements with different universities. Very, very important to keep on studying, to keep on doing things. There's one project with Erasmus that is called Mind the Gap. So that's the idea, right? To like, you know, to have something there in between. So yeah, it's there's a range of things, let's say.
Alexander, I wanted to talk to you about fantastic player from Iceland, Sarah Bjork. She came out with this beautiful piece that she wrote for Players Tribune, and it got a lot of traction all over the world. And she really was honest about the difficulties about being a woman footballer who was pregnant, who had a baby, and what her rights were involving her current club and her contract. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, this is this was a quite shocking case. If you ask me, it was the first case after the maternity regulations were approved in the FIFA RCP, in these regulations of the status of this transfer of players. These regulations were implemented by FIFA because of the push of FIFPro. We really, really pushed for this. We created our policy. And many of the parts that we suggested were included there. And we thought, okay, with this, we have some protection. But to be very honest, we were not thinking of this scenario. We were thinking of, you know, a smaller club with a smaller player in terms of, you know, we never thought that one of the biggest clubs in the world with a star, that they would not comply with basic, you know, maternity rights.
For those of you who don't know, Sarah is a fantastic player, as I said, from Iceland, and she played for Olympic Lyonnais, one of the biggest clubs in the world, men or women. And we're referring to the struggles that she went through in her excitement being pregnant. And so these are the struggles that we're referring to. And thankfully, FIFPro got involved. And please continue on, Alexandra.
Yeah, so at first, what she did, which was really smart, and they really encouraged, you know, all players to do the same. The moment she found out she was pregnant, she called us to see what were her rights. She knew there was something on the regulations, which she wasn't sure like how that played out together with, you know, French law, because she was playing in France and in the UNES. So that was, I think, really smart from her. So she didn't have any problem yet. You know, but just wanted to know, which is always positive. And so we had this initial conversation. We explained to her what the relations meant, what she could expect, etc. And we were really very surprised when she contacted again us like a couple of months later, saying like, "I have not received my salary." So we immediately, and she the same. Like we all thought, "Oh, this is a mistake," you know, like. Probably something with the paperwork, or they didn't really understand like how, you know, regulations apply. So we wrote to the club, like really friendly, saying like, "Hey, this has happened. As you know, the regulations apply. This article, that article." So, you know, but like in a really nice tone, because we really thought, oh, the moment they receive this, they will say, "We're so sorry. Here is your salary." But that was not the case. So it took a while, first of all, for them to reply. And then when they did, their understanding was that French law applied. And according to French law, they were sending her to kind of the sick leave. And the sick leave implies that she received a percentage of her salary. But on top of that, that is stopped, right? So it's a very low amount. I mean, she was receiving less than 10% of her salary, right? That was what they were paying her. So we explained again that no, that actually the regulations were mandatory, because they are, these are like minimums that FIFA states for every country, even if there's no maternity leave, if the concept does not exist in the country, it doesn't matter. For FIFA, it does exist and it's there. And then if at national level you have better provisions on whatever standards, those apply. But like this is just the bottom, and then upwards everything, downwards nothing. And they still did not agree with us. So we really had to end up suing them in the FIFA dispute resolution chamber. And then there was a ruling of the chamber understanding that we were right, that our position was correct, that the FIFA RSTP was a document that had to apply, at least as a bare minimum. The FIFA RSTP states that the players will receive their salary in full while pregnant and until they start the maternity leave. Once they start the maternity leave, for a minimum, again, of 14 weeks, they will receive a minimum of 2/3. But during the pregnancy, until the player decides to start the maternity leave, she's entitled to 100% of her salary. So this was, it's kind of bittersweet. On one hand, we're really happy, of course, that she won and that, you know, everything is okay. On the other hand, we're disappointed that we had our first case with one of the biggest clubs. Because we can only imagine what happens, you know, in other clubs.
And you really want them to be the example. They have the money, they have the funds, they have these fantastic players, they're known worldwide. And for them to just say, no, we're going to refer to our own country's law, even though we're sanctioned under FIFA, we're just going to throw that aside and we're going to stick to our law. So it is unfortunate. Where is Sarah headed to now? Do we know? Is she going to remain at the club?
No, she left already. She's at Juventus.
She went to Juventus. Great.
Yes. So she's very happy there. So yeah,
and it is an example. She is the example, and FIFPro as well, for all women who go through that. So there needed to be this case, unfortunately, to set that precedence and to let other clubs know you can't do that.
Exactly. I mean, on one hand, it's disappointing that it was this club. On the other hand, it gave us a much bigger platform because everyone was talking about the case. So now everyone knows that you cannot do that. And if Olympique Lyonnais was not allowed to do that, then no club will be allowed to do that. So I think that is a strong message. I think Sarah was incredibly courageous, you know, to come out like that. She said, I just want players to know this. And I just want that my experience at least can help, you know, other players. I think in the end it was a very positive thing, but what she had to go through while being pregnant, she was supposed to be focused on her baby and, you know, like enjoying the moment. And of course she did anyway, but she was in this fight with her employer it was not even on her, because she could still be okay, you know, without that income for a couple of months. But it was like philosophical, it was ethical, you know, how are they doing this to me? I give everything for the club. She was even, and it was not only the payment, they completely abandoned her, like once she went to Iceland. They didn't even call her to see how she was feeling. She got COVID in between while pregnant, you know, it can be a bit risky, no call. She hired herself a personal trainer to keep fit because she wanted to come back to the club, you know, to give the best for the club. And as a return, you get that. So it was a really, nasty feeling. But well, in the end, I think it's really helping a lot. And it actually also triggered, in a way, not only Sarah's case, but some further studies that we are doing at FIFPro. Also from the moment that the player returns, because we worked a lot in the regulations on the pregnancy and maternity leave, right? But we also want to focus on how to deal with and what to do once the player is back. Because you're back in the team with a three-month-old baby, it's not like, oh, fine, like I'm, you know, the same as before I left. So you need special training, you need people that know like what muscles were affected and how to recover those. You also sometimes need some extra support psychologically because you're going through a lot, and you need financial support also from the club in terms of being allowed to bring your baby when you are in an away match. And also not only your baby, you need a companion, you need someone to look after, of course, the baby, etc., etc. So there are many things that we still need to look at. So we're not there yet, but it's really good that this topic is like, you know, on the table and we are discussing it. So let's hope that it all gets better.
Well, Like you said, it took a lot of courage from Sarah to really tell her story in a fantastic, beautiful way. For all of you who have not read the article, please look it up. It's on the Players Tribune, Sarah Bjork. So she is my hero today, and so are you. Alexandra, I want to thank you. I want to thank all of FIFE Pro. Please give Carolyn a hello for me. She's always stood by me and helped me through some hard times when I went through with U.S. soccer. But thank you all for being a voice for all professional footballers. And it's an honor to have you on Hope Solo Speaks today.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for giving us the voice here.
Of course. Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.